As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Warning, this podcast contains spoilers for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and the Halo series, including the finale. So if you haven't caught up with those particular pieces of content, make sure to skip those sections of our podcast. That's all. Thank you. Hello. My name is Jason Concepcion, and I'm currently in the throes of the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, which I tested positive for last weekend and have been suffering symptoms of from about a day before I had tested positive for it. All of which is to say, this is going to be a crazy episode because not only am I suffering from the novel coronavirus, COVID-19, but my brilliant co-host, the best in the business, folks, the number one comics writer, pop historian in the game today, Rosie Knight. Rosie, how are you?
I also have novel coronavirus, aka COVID-19, and somehow we didn't get this at the same place. We legitimately have not seen each other in public for a long time in real life.
Good point, Rosie, because here's what I have to say.
This happened.
You can read the news, the COVID is rampant right now. People wear your masks. I've been to numerous places over the last, the last week in the zone when I could have gotten it. And I was always one of like the 5% of people there wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't gone away, folks. And this time, it's crazy. This is my second go around with COVID-19, the novel coronavirus. The first time I basically just slept for like 18 hours. And then like 2 days later, I felt fine. This time, like Terminator 2 or Aliens or Godfather 2, the sequel is much more potent than the original. And I feel like I got a fucking house dropped on me. Yes. How do you feel, Rosie?
I would concur. This is not my first time having COVID, seeing as we are living through a global pandemic in busy cities. But this is the worst time. I have been haunting my house like a fucking sickened ghost. I have a fever every day. It is like you said, it's truly like the James Cameron's Aliens to Ridley Scott's Alien. The first one was like a brain foggy, slow, lucid experience. Yeah. This is like Space Marines shooting you with a big space gun.
It's
very bad.
Folks, it's gnarly. Don't get it. And wear your mask, be safe, and take care of yourselves.
And other people.
And other people around you who, for reasons not having to do with ignorance, perhaps can't get the numerous vaccines that are out there because of the previous medical conditions, the fact that they're immunocompromised, et cetera. Those people are living in a state of constant fear. We can make their plight a little bit less stressful by hopefully getting vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated by now, I'm not sure what happened. But also just wearing your mask because it's out here, folks. It's out here. I saw Paul McCartney at SoFi, and again, one of like 5% of the people there who was wearing a mask. So it is here, folks. And also anecdotally, as this very podcast episode recording proves, I've even like when it was pre-vaccines, when it was like really, 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 really scary, I didn't know this many people like that had it. So I know so many people that have it right now.
Same.
Or had it last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's going around, and I don't really go out many places or go and do big socializing things just to protect my own health. And I always wear a mask and I still got it. So just everybody's getting it. It's good to just take care. And it's hard right now because the way that the numbers are being reported and the fact that a lot of people are testing at home means we won't necessarily see those numbers in the same way we did in other waves. So it's just really good to follow your gut and be thoughtful for your own sake and for other people's. And because this is very gnarly. You don't want to be sitting here sweating like us, sweating, talking about She-Hulk.
I know. Well, great transition, because let's do that. In today's episode and the previously on, we're going to talk about a bunch of news from this week, headlined by the She-Hulk trailer drop, the delightful She-Hulk trailer drop. We will talk about the Halo finale and the fact that Master Chief popped his cherry. He did it, and people aren't necessarily happy about it. We will talk about some other news, and then we will go to the airlock, where we will talk about when you're sick and you're sitting at home, what do you watch? What do you read? What do you do to just kind of comfort you through it? And that's in our airlock section. Of course, as always, if you want to jump around, check out the timestamps in the show notes. First up, let's go to the news. The She-Hulk trailer. She-Hulk, attorney at law! She's barred, folks. She's a barred attorney at New York State. It's Jennifer Walters' cousin of our good friend Bruce Banner. The show starring Tatiana Maslany as Jennifer Walters. Mark Ruffalo as Bruce Banner. Hello, Tim Roth. As Emil Blonsky, Benedict Wong as Wong, and others. Let's talk about this trailer, which is absolutely super, super fun.
Delightful.
Here's my first takeaway. Hulk's arm is fine. Therefore, this is pre-Endgame. Therefore, we're going to fill in the stuff clearly post-snap. And that is Bruce Banner's, you know, post-Ragnarok journey to becoming Professor Hulk. We're going to see some of that timeline filled in. And that is super, super cool and awesome.
Yeah. I want to talk about that because, like, if you're not like us and you don't be pausing the trailer and everything, you might be like, what are you talking about? But this is it. In Endgame, we met Professor Hulk, who explained that he was a new version of Banner and Hulk combined. He was not a third entity. He was who he is. He's an intelligent, green-skinned man.
I put the brown and the braids together.
Exactly. And he's looking hunky. And I'm sure some people on the internet were calling him daddy.
Jeez.
And then at the end of Shang-Chi, we saw Bruce Banner in his human form a sling on his arm, because in Endgame, we saw Hulk wield the Infinity Gauntlet and do the snap. And it really messed up his arm. So in the modern continuity, we know that Bruce is back in his normal human body and he has an arm sling. In this trailer, as Jason so smartly noticed, he is Professor Hulk and his arms are looking fine. So it is very, very likely that this is going to be in that period between Infinity War and Endgame, which is something we have yet to see.
Another thing we're going to see, I think we can deduce from this wonderful, again, trailer. There's the part of the trailer in which, one of the heads of the law firm that Jennifer works for says, hey, we want to start a superhero division, which is directly very much a comics thing. Like, Jennifer's specialty is powered incidents, cases involving or related to people with powers.
Mm-hmm.
And we remember from Shang-Chi, right, that Emil Blonsky, the Abomination, in his comics accurate form, was doing fights for money against Wong. And we're like, holy shit, wasn't he like in jail? Wasn't he in Super People jail? And we see him in this trailer when one of the law partners mentions, hey, we want to start a superhero, a superpowered persons division. I think this is how he gets out. I think Jennifer, and honestly, rightly so, I think you would make the argument that, like, hey, we can't hold this guy forever. Like, it's actually, yes, he's theoretically a weapon of mass destruction, but there's other powered people out there now who are also similarly powerful. And what does it mean legally that we can just like hold this guy ad infinitum? And I think that's how Emil Blonsky gets his freedom or whatever status he has by Shang-Chi, where he's able to come and go at will.
Yeah, I think you're right. Also, I think that the cell that we see in this trailer that we see Jennifer in when she's testing her Hulk powers, that looks very similar to where we see Abomination walk back into during Shang-Chi. So I think that Bruce, whatever part of Bruce's life this is, it's going to be important and foundational to the notion of whatever's going on in the current continuity. We know that S.W.O.R.D. was set up, you know, within this. That was a really big time for S.W.O.R.D. after, and we found out about all the plans that they were making because of what had happened because of the blip. So it wouldn't surprise me if some of the things that we thought we were going to see, or we thought we were seeing being established with Shang-Chi, like Dark Avengers, etc., if those things might have already been in the works during this 5 years, and we're going to kind of retroactively learn about them and see how they could come into play in the wider MCU.
What else do we see? Let's talk about this. So we see in the opening shots, we see a car tumbling down the hill. Now, in the comics, Jennifer gets her powers because she needs a blood transfusion she has a particular blood type. And so they go to a relative. And of course, Bruce Banner is the relative. And the side effect of him donating blood to his cousin is that the gamma radiation in his blood also gets into Jen's body, and she reacts in a very similar way to Bruce and becomes the Shield. Now, in the comics, it's gangsters shoot her because of her legal activities, and she requires this blood transfusion. So I think clearly it's going to be an accident rather than gangsters, which anyway is like, I think Punisher like debuted like 2 years before that. So it's like they just like reused the Punisher's origin.
They were like everyone's family's being killed by gangsters. Probably at family barbecues.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. And something that our super producer Saul was saying when we were prepping for this episode was like, Hawkeye did something really interesting where it tied Kate Bishop's origin and her tragic backstory directly into events of the MCU. And that definitely feels like something we could see here. But from the tone of the show, which is like very 80s and funny and kind of like feels a bit more lighthearted than a lot of the other stuff we've gotten, I wouldn't be surprised to see them play with that kind of fan favorite conversation about like collateral damage, which is like not something we've really seen very much. They touched on it in the Netflix stuff, but I wouldn't be surprised if her accident was like something got thrown and hit a brick wall and then it fell on her during an Avengers fight
or something.
It's like the snap, an ice cream van had a guy who wasn't driving, and I just think like this show seems to be going into that humor, and it's if it's gonna be like the comics, she's always been a very meta fourth wall breaking character, so to have a little bit of that conversation with the audience and say, well, this is kind of what it's like for normal people who live in the MCU, you might not even end up being normal because your cousin's got gamma blood.
Let's talk about one of the real surprises in this trailer, which is the very, very brief shot of Frogman.
Frogman, I did not know this was going to happen. I cannot believe this happened. I cannot believe it.
Tell us about Frogman. Frogman, very, very minor character that I maintain was at least in some form a like aesthetic influence on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Claim that. I have no evidence for that, but I claim that.
The truth is that all those, I mean, TMNT is like one of my favorite topics. And all of those comics, the original black and white stuff, which is very dark and very funny, was an absolute response to Marvel and DC and big superhero comics. So that would make a lot of sense, especially when you think about the fact that, like, in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, for example, the bad group is called the Foot, clan instead of the hand, you know, and stuff like that. So it's very, it was like a self-published kind of shitpost comic. And I love that it became this teen, this like kids powerhouse. But yes, Frogman. It is with a hyphen like Spider-Man, so don't spell it wrong or else the comic fans might get upset with you. Created by JM DeMatteis and Kerry Gamill from a Marvel Team-Up issue, Marvel Team-Up 121, June 1982, which I believe
those were
it,
fun, man.
Yeah, and that puts it between that. I think that puts it before the first, 2 years before the first Ninja Turtles comic.
So that's why I'm saying, and also like Eugene, the Frogman's
Eugene
secret identity. Eugene's like 15. This is why I claim that Frogman is an influence on Tia. But like, again, I have no, I'm saying this
without any
evidence.
Let's get Kevin Eastman on here to talk about this. Yeah. Local legend.
Yeah.
So yes, his mother is called Rosie. Shout out to me.
Yeah.
And he basically makes like, he's like a kid who wants to be a villain and it is like really weird and strange. And he definitely one of those weird characters from the 70s and 80s where you're just like, how did this get in there?
Yeah, like, but he actually, like Paste Pot Pete, like kind of level character.
I have to say this actually, and basically he is like, he's one of those characters who's so out there and weird that if you're a comic book writer, occasionally, if you're like, if like me and Jason got to write a comic, we would be pulling these weird characters that we love. Yes. So he pops up like he's in Secret Invasion, you know, as a Skrull. He's in like, you that see these a, different.
What a fucking crazy, by the way, hilarious pull in Secret Invasion that Frogman was a Skrull.
And then like, I mean, he's definitely, I think there's character, there's creators now who remember him fondly because he pops up a lot. And to see him here, they do a really good job kind of recontextualizing the costume, which in the comics is like very cartoony. In the trailer, as we see it, it looks kind of like a Super Sentai costume, like a like a Power Rangers costume meets Vigilante from the recently released Peacemaker show that we talked a lot about. So I'm very interested to see. My gut says he will be someone that she represents. That seems to be the only way to easily build him into the show, unless he is actually secretly the villain and Titania's like going to be her ally instead.
I'm glad you mentioned Titania, played by Jamila Jamil. She is, we assume, going to be the big bad of the series and is a frequent foil for She-Hulk over the years. Mm-hmm. Now, Titania, in the comics gets her powers from Dr. Doom. It
dun,
will be
dun dun
dun dun dun. It will be absolutely. I will be fascinated to know where she gets her powers this time.
Yeah.
Also in the comics, one more connection with the first of all, She-Hulk was a member of the Fantastic Four, so there's that. And then also, She-Hulk represented Dr. Doom's son. In his attempt to basically flee Latveria and become an American citizen. So there are a lot of really cool Dr. Doom connections, and it just feels like, once again, we're inching towards a Fantastic Four canonical debut. The fact that we saw John Krasinski as Reed Richards notwithstanding.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's a really interesting pull. Obviously, she's like a really famous She-Hulk villain, and it makes sense because they're obviously going for kind of like an Ally McBeal vibe. So it makes sense to give her like a female antagonist. But I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some kind of implication of like a power broker sort. Like, where did she get this power from?
That's great. Yeah,
how
yeah.
could she get it? Also, in the comics, like, even though it's kind of a wacky origin, during the Secret Wars stuff, I think it's Secret Wars 3 where she's introduced, it's actually like bad. She does get tested on and has this kind of what could definitely be written as like a tragic backstory or a reason to be pissed off at people or a reason to kind of want to become a villain. So I think there's interesting stuff to dig into there. And I think it's really interesting that in this, the first trailer for the show, it's just this kind of like glimpse of a fight.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested to see where they go because I feel like the MCU is definitely blurring the lines between like good guys and bad guys and kind of that gray area between ally and antagonist. And I think that relationship could be prime for that. And the fact that Wong is going to be in this show, and we know that he is connected to Abomination, he's connected to whatever this secret team he's kind of trying to put together. He's like the new Phase 4 Nick Fury, which I love.
I love that. At some point, we should discuss the fact that Comics Wong currently is great. Movie Wong is orders of magnitude the best Wong. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even close to how cool, how much cooler he is in the movies than in the
And I think you can absolutely, one, Benedict Wong shout out. That's like all you.
Great.
Like, you're killing it. And I think that you can't understate his impact on why the comic book Wong is better. Because, like, these movies and comics are so intertwined. And when you have such a brilliant, in-depth, like, thoughtful, funny, silly, strong, brilliant character. And I know that some people were definitely also like becoming like thirsty for Wong after Doctor Strange 2. I've seen the internet. I know people were feeling it. Like, he had a new outfit. He was looking good. And like, I just, I love it. And I love that it's up the game. I mean, honestly, they've done a really great job recontextualizing that Orientalist aspect.
Yes.
That's so key to like the older Doctor Strange stuff.
There might be some of our listeners out there like, oh, I love the trailer. I'm getting into comics. What can I read? It's super, super easy. Read Dan Slott's She-Hulk, The Complete Collection. This is a story by Dan Slott. Adi Granoff on cover art. Also, Paul Pelletier and Scott Collins on art. It kind of like set the modern tone for She-Hulk as a character in the early 2000s as this kind of like one-time shy lawyer who has become this very like super confident, hard charging, work hard, play hard character who's like who is. In a lot of ways, like a focus point for the female superhero community. Like, she has so many friends across the female superhero community, which is part of what makes that that collection so fun. Is just like, I've said this many times. I'm a big fan of like superheroes just hang out stories, and there's so many scenes in that collection where it's just like Jen just hanging out with her friends. Jen
She's
just
really
hanging
good
out
at
with,
that. It- Also, because she's like, one of the few, she's one of like the few heroes aside from like the Fantastic Four. So she's going to be one of the first MCU heroes who has like a full-time job. She's not just like bumming around, like somehow not getting paid for being an Avenger. She has like a full-time job. So that leads to a lot of funny kind of slice of life, sitting around stuff. And I mean, in that Dan Slott collection, Titania is like a major antagonist. So you're looking for there. You have... the new poster that they just released is almost certainly based on one of Greg Horn's covers, which is actually the back of the collection, which is her kind of striding up these stairs, you know, and the visualization that they've gone for as Tatiana as She-Hulk is very much that Greg Horn kind of vibe. She's big, but she's like shapely and she's kind of athletic. And so it's very interesting to see that.
So there's that. So there's the She-Hulk Collector by Dan Slott, complete collection. This collects like She-Hulk 1 to 12 and I think a couple, maybe an annual or something like that. And then She-Hulk the Complete Collection, a more recent collection by Charles Sewell, Javier Pulido, and Munsa of Vicente. And that one is just super, super funny. Charles Sewell was a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So he's got all the lingo down, and that's another one where it's like Jen hanging out with Hellcat, you know, like
her friendship with Patsy is so great, and I wonder if that's going to be something that plays in.
That's okay. So I have a prediction. I'm going to be, we know, our listeners know how much we love to make predictions, and we don't care if they're wrong. We just love to do it.
Yeah, it's just fun.
Here's. So much of like the texture of Jennifer Walter's stories is about the role she plays in the broader superhero community and her friendship and bonds with various figures throughout the female superhero community. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see more than Frogman debut. I think we might see others. I think we might, because like, if you think about it, superhero division. I get that there's a lot of, like, you know, property damage and loss of life from the various superhero incidents around the world. Who could forget Hulk fucking up Harlem and every place he goes, you know, but there's, when you talk about the community, it's not like there's that many, you know, like there's not that many folks that she could represent. She could represent, you know, Bruce Banner in the various lawsuits that are probably lodged against him for destroying, you know, Betty's college, Harlem, et cetera. There's,
but it's not like there's,
but there's not that many. She could get Ant-Man, like his charges dropped, et cetera. But there's not like that many. There's really not that many superheroes yet. So I do wonder if we might not, if the Frogman drop isn't a signal that, hey, all those like really, really fun, rarely used, minor Marvel characters, we might see some of them pop up here.
Yeah, I think that you're right. And I also think this is going to continue the Hawkeye tradition, not just in tone, but in rebranding and reshaping the Netflix Marvel shows as something for the main MCU. It's quite likely we might see Matt Murdock here. He too is a lawyer, and him and Jennifer have worked alongside each other. And something else that you just made me realize when we're talking about this, it could work as the, it could work in the same way the Netflix shows worked, which is when you actually watch those shows, they introduce so many comic book characters because they needed like a living community. Yeah. Like Luke Cage, so many characters. And no MCU show has really done that. Hawkeye used names of characters, but it wasn't actually, they didn't become those characters as we knew them. She-Hulk could be a way of introducing a new character. I mean, if they wanted to do it like a procedural, you could have a new character that she's looking after every week, you know? And it would be a way to build out that community. It would be very funny.
It would be super funny.
And some of them, you know, you have her defending a hero, you have her defending a villain, you have her kind of building that moral compass. And like that, the Charles Soule run that you were talking about with Javier's amazing art, like that's the one where she defends the son of Dr. Doom and she and Captain America.
Yes.
You know, so there's all different kinds of ways that you can explore that. And I think that looking to those two, this one has her face down with Matt Murdock. Like Deadpool is in this and there's a holiday party. So you get that fun space. I just think this could be a launch pad for building out those weirder, smaller superhero roles.
Yeah. And again, I wonder if we, it'd be cool to get a Hellcat drop in this. Hellcat, one of the oldest Marvel character. Yep. I mean, going back to the 40s, like this is like a
that's from the days when
comics era, like fucking Marvel
fashion,
character.
Fashion comics. Really incredible times. People forget those old days when women were seen as a truly large part, half of the market. So they had romance comics, they had fashion comics, and that's where Patsy Walker, who became Patsy Walker Hellcat, came from. And she was in the Jessica Jones show in a kind of reimagined version. But this version of She-Hulk seems like a better place to bring in a different version of her. There was a She-Cat, there was a Hellcat comic with incredible art by Brittany Williams a few years ago. And that was very much like She-Hulk's having a party at the office. Yeah. And like, look at all these different characters who are here. And oh no, who are you going to have to defend? Is it going to be like,
that's my favorite. That's what I love about She-Hulk stories. Yeah. And that's why I hope, and that's why I say, because it is really such an important part of the texture and feel of Jennifer Walter's stories. And so, you know, selfishly, I just hope we see a lot of,
I think the tone of the trailer,
heroes pop up.
It hints at that. It hints like her and Bruce in the bar. There's like a comedy. And she obviously acclimates, just like in the comics, she acclimates very well to being in her She-Hulk form because that's how she chooses to be.
Yeah.
And it looks like from the trailer, that's going to be the case for most of the show.
Well, we can't wait for this one. Up next, let's welcome in our super producer, Chris, to talk about the Halo series and the finale of the Halo series, which recently aired on Paramount Plus. Chris,
hey there.
Tell us about Halo.
I have to say, overall, it was a little bit disappointing. I know we were all pretty optimistic after the first episode. Like, okay, the Covenant are here. They're teasing like the conflict with the colonies. The UNSC are the kind of the bad guys. Like, there was potential. And I have to say that in the whole series, about 20 minutes of like really good Halo stuff in there. But those 20 minutes, I have to say, are really good.
Here is my takeaway. I haven't watched the finale yet, but I've watched like the first five episodes. My takeaway is that very, very clearly, 80% of the budget went to the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And that immediately thereafter, it fucking falls off in terms of like scope, in terms of what they're and the storytelling kind of takes a hit after that. So when you say not a lot of quote unquote Halo stuff, what do you mean?
Like, you know, I think there's always that question of why even adapt? Like, what more can you really gain out of doing a film when the games are pretty cinematic? I think the one big thing you can do is you can show just what incredible soldiers and fighters and like combatants everyone is, all these Spartans are. That's more than just a first person POV holding a gun. You know, like these fights should look, you know, crazy. You know, I mean, like maybe not quite The Raid, which is like, you know, we've talked about like one of the greatest action movies ever made.
I would love if a TV show tried to look like The Raid. That would make me very happy.
Yeah, just like let's really see great fight choreography. And the first episode, you get a bit of that as you do in five, and then the finale. Like finale, you finally get, you know, Silver Team, the four Spartans going up against this like massive wave of Covenant. You know, almost feels like the firefight situation on like ODST.
Yeah, like Horde mode.
Horde mode, exactly. Yeah, like, and it's honestly like the fight's really good, and they finally bring in a little bit of the Halo theme, which I think is just like one of the coolest themes. I absolutely love it so much, and it's really, really fun. And yeah, Jason, to your point, you feel like, oh, this is where they spent all the budget. It was like on these like three really big epic fight sequences. You know, in episode five, we see, I think it's John, we see one of the Spartans like jump on top of a Banshee, right? It's like, okay, like this is pulling stuff from the game. This is really fun and exciting. You know, and for those that have read those books, you know, the Eric Nyland novels, which we've talked about, there's a lot of really great lore in there. And they just kind of jettisoned all of that. Like, I really wanted to see the Spartans as a kind of family.
Yeah.
Like, one of the tragedies of reading those books is whenever they lose one of their soldiers, like, you know, they're kind of programmed to be emotionally unaffected. You can tell it hurts them when they lose one of their own. And they didn't really go there either. Like, that could have been the really great heart of the story. And I feel like they kind of skirted around that for just a lot of really generic in-room conversations.
Well, something else that is kind of not Halo-y is Master Chief got his dick wet. Master Chief, the cherry got popped. He got out of his armor and got into something a lot more comfortable. And the reason that fans are upset, like hardcore, you know, the fans who have read the books and are up on the lore, is part of the Spartan training program is fucking brutal. Like, when you read the Nyland books, you're like, holy shit, this is terrible.
It's horrifying.
What they did to these kids to train them to be these super soldiers. And part of that is they injected them with various steroids and drugs. And part of that medical regimen was that their sex drive was, you know, medicinally depressed. It was like basically like lowered to nothing because they didn't want Spartans having any kind of like emotional and or physical connection to anyone. They just wanted them to be like killing machines. And and then guess what? Master Chief had sex in the show. How was it? Were you upset by it as a Halo fan? And what did we see? What happened there?
I mean, it felt a little bit out of character, but I wasn't upset about it. I'm like, okay, I get what they're doing. You know, they're just like, okay, I get what they're trying to do here. They're trying to give him a romance with this other character, McKee. You know, I'm never going to complain about Pablo Schreiber being naked, which he is a few times in this series.
And congratulations.
Looking great. Looking absolutely great.
The internet was happy to see his buns.
Yeah.
as was I. Like, there's nothing gratuitous about those butt shots. They're fantastic. So from that perspective, I'm like, okay, I'm on board with this. It definitely didn't make me upset. It just felt a little bit, I don't know, kind of unnecessary. It definitely felt a little bit out of character. And it's like, it's not going to make me angry that they changed things. Like, that's part of an adaptation. You got to change things. But I didn't think it necessarily added a lot to the story.
It sounds like it's actually a bit of a missed opportunity, because that's such a tragic and kind of brutal bit of lore that they could have done a scene where it's like an intimacy scene that isn't to do with fucking. And that could have been like a really interesting, emotive way to explore like that side of the past. And
I
also
love that,
like,
actually.
That kind
that's
of,
actually a great, yeah. right? That's actually like, a really great and tragic plot device where it's right? like, you know, he can't. Like,
yeah.
He can't
find
do that.
You find other ways of being intimate. Like that, I think that's a shame. That kind of like, it's, I really liked the first couple of episodes. I felt like it's like really ambitious, weird sci-fi storytelling. But I just think it's a shame because I think like, if you can't keep that going for those little moments when you could do something that's really like emotionally powerful like that, then it, you know, does it hit basically? Like you said, it left you, you watched it and you were like, nice to see his butt, but like.
Yeah, it just felt generic, you know, and I think that was the big disappointment of this series is that for me, Halo's never felt generic. It's always been kind of special. Mm. And like the Master Chief, despite being kind of like, kind of a blank canvas, has always felt special too. And this was just like, eh.
Yeah. Is there anything that you would want to see them do in like a second season that would redeem it? Or like that you're interested in exploring?
I'm not like totally writing it off. You know, like every series takes a little bit of time to get its footing. And if they are going to push it more towards like those sort of battle sequences, like we saw here, maybe fewer episodes, bigger scope and scale, more fight with the Covenant, which requires more budget, then I actually think there is some potential here. It's like there was just enough here for me to want to keep going and be a little bit disappointed. But I would say like, you know, I can't say it's any better than any other Halo thing. I can't be like, hey, like dedicate 9 hours to this thing instead of reading one of the books or playing one of the games. But I think in a second season with a bit more money, we can see more of like that big scale come in. Because the Covenant are barely in it, unfortunately. And I was hoping that the villains
CGI
were
too expensive, baby.
It's too expensive. And it looks good. Yeah. Like, honestly, yeah, the Covenant look good when they bring him in there, you know, and they bring in little nods to the game. Like, you know, we see them like initially stealthily take out a bunch of grunts by hitting them in the head. Like, okay, we've all done this. We knew where we're going. So I think maybe a little bit more of that and I could be on board. So.
Well, I'm actually looking forward to catching up on this. Maybe that's one of the things I do in the throes of COVID-19, the novel coronavirus. Up next, the airlock, where we will tell you about what we do when we're sick.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the airlock. Stay on the other side of it, folks, because your hosts today, Rosie and I, have been stricken with the novel coronavirus COVID-19. And so you're going to want to stay on the other side of that airlock so that you don't catch it. And today in the airlock, we're going to talk about the things that we as a team, super producers Chris and Saul,
hey,
and Rosie and I, do when we're sick. What do we watch? What do we do? What do we read? What are the things that comfort us and get us through this really horrific fucking feeling that we're feeling right now? Rosie, let's start with you. What have you been doing in the time?
So,
by the way, let me just start with this. I texted on Monday, like, hey, I have COVID. Like, let's cancel the pre-pro meeting, yada, yada, yada. And you were like, I'm glad that it's funny you should text right now because I too have COVID. And yes, let's definitely push the meeting. So when did you start feeling it, and what have you been doing since then?
Like Thursday-ish. And then Friday was really the day. But it's only gotten worse, baby. It's only gotten worse. So I had actually just incidentally kind of like taken some time off to like, I was like, I'm going to do some writing. I'm going to like do some stuff. I had my mom visit and then lo and behold, it just ended up working out because it meant I could just lay around and rest. And one of the things that I did that was very comforting that we haven't talked about yet somehow that is easily up there with like my favorite shows of the year was I finished Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, it's a great show.
Yeah, I'd been saving like the last two episodes because I didn't want it to be finished.
Don't spoil the finale because there are some really great. The finale has some great stuff.
I'm not even going to really spoil anything. I'm just going to tell you why it's good and you should watch it. So it's the much lauded Taika Waititi produced starring pirate show. And it is just like, along with Abbott Elementary, another one of my favorite shows of the year, it is like the funniest, like kindest, sweetest, weirdest show. And the cast is incredible. And the writing is funny. And it's just like one of those half hour comedies where you're just like, damn, I wish I had made this. Because it is like so
it's
good.
Really
and
great.
It's so surprising. But it's also very cozy. It has like, I was sending around everyone who was like saying that they enjoyed it. I was like, there's this old English tradition of like weird musical kids shows. And one of them was called Maid Marian and Her Merry Men. And it was done by the guys who made Blackadder. And when I was a kid, like, I always think about that. And the opening of the first show is this guy singing like a reggae song about like mud and how terrible it is to be a peasant in like Britain. And this show has that same like weird British musical kids show energy. Like it has some, it is for adults. Like it's got some violence, but generally you're just like, this is like a really funny kids show, but made for people my age.
It's surprisingly wholesome.
Oh, it's so wholesome.
For being pirates.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is actually like really nice.
Saul, what do you watch? What is your go-to when you're sick?
It's a good question. I think my go-to when I'm sick is probably like, I want something really comforting and comfortable. Nothing like complicated. I want to minimize complexity. And I want, I mean, like the familiar is hard to beat. Like I want mm-hmm. something relatively familiar. So I'll often rewatch. I got to say, when I was a kid, and this is actually still true, my mom would take me to work with her when I was really sick. And I would just sit in her office and watch on her like other computer, watch movies. The Ocean's Trilogy would be something I would watch over and over again.
That's just, an ultimate comfort watch.
Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great one.
Watching Brad Pitt and... I mean, especially Brad Pitt. I love Brad Pitt, but watching Brad Pitt and Clooney just like sort of like stylishly solve problems and like do it with no issues at all is just like very pleasing. I'm like, this is, it's complicated, but it's so not complicated. They make it too easy. That's what I want life to be like.
The stakes are high, but low.
Exactly.
Like you can watch it and you're like, they're stealing a lot, but this is not stressful. This is relaxing. I'm glad to be involved in this.
Yeah, I'm like, this is good. $100 million? I want that. This is great. If only this could be so easy.
Chris, what is your go-to sick content?
I think if I'm sick, probably the first movie I put on is probably the movie I've seen the most of my entire life, which is The Great Mouse Detective. Like the kind of forgotten 1980s
Disney. Come on, respect to Basil. That's the one. Man.
I mean, you know, and Vincent Price's Radigan is like one of the all-time mm-hmm. great camp villains. And I watch the movie probably 3 or 4 times a year. If I'm ever just like feeling like a little bit like hungover or sick or whatever, I'm like, okay, I'm throwing that on. And when I had COVID back in October 2020, you know, pre-vaccine, when it was like, you can't go anywhere, do anything. You don't know how long you're going to be sick. So I basically quarantined for 3 weeks, more or less. And I caught up on a lot of Batman comics. I reread the Cataclysm and No Man's Land arc. But I went and tracked down like all the side issues that weren't included in like the trade collective versions that I had in the 90s. You know, thank you for, what is it? DC Infinity or whatever. That was fantastic.
A great
and
service.
Then I started,
a blessing.
It is. Yeah, no, it was really excellent. I caught up on a lot of comics. And then the other thing I did was I got back into building custom Lego sets I hadn't done in probably like a decade or so. And I just had a bunch of pieces lying around. And so for the first time in a long time, like I built like a little custom Batmobile and a little Tumblr. And I was like, oh, I'm actually really, really proud of how these came out.
So
this is pretty great. Yeah, I just like sat in my apartment for 3 weeks and built Legos and read comics, and it was honestly
good.
it was fantastic.
Sounds great.
Part of me kind of misses it now at this point.
You know what? That era of like weird Disney movies from like what they were seeing as like a flop era, they definitely come for me. Like one of my ultimate ones is The Black Cauldron. I watched that movie
a lot,
and it's so scary and weird and like just off key, but it's so comforting. And that definitely, like, that Basil the Mouse Detective, like, Disney Plus in that way has kind of been a blessing and a curse because they have a lot of those vaulted movies, but they also used to just be free to rent from the library services because, like, nobody wanted them.
So, right.
But it's easier to find them on Disney Plus. Yeah, no, that's a great call.
They were dark, too. Like,
Black Cauldron is, like, legitimately terrifying.
Yeah, like it freaked me out. Like it's still to this day, like there's a part of my brain that like shivers a little bit whenever a fidget busts through the window. Like mm-hmm. I should still be scared by this all these years later. Yeah, they're dark and cool. I really like that era, actually.
The one for me like that was Pagemaster.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah, from 1994. Yeah. Yes.
So scary. The Mr. Hyde was so scary to me. Like just like all of it was freaky, but like you just kind of like want more of it. It feels like a version of a fever a little bit. Like, let me just try to like get the bad stuff out.
Dude, Joe Johnston, he's a pretty legit Comfort Watches director, actually, because he directed Rocketeer, another brilliant Comfort Watch.
Rocketeer. Yeah. Shouts amazing.
Shouts to Rocketeer.
Right. First Avenger.
Shouts to Jennifer Connelly, my first wife.
Mm-hmm.
Is fantastic in The Rocketeer. A movie that should have been like a hit, but wasn't a hit.
Mm-hmm.
Fun movie.
Yeah.
Really fun film.
Super fun.
There's no way Captain America exists, the first Avenger, directed by him, if that movie didn't exist.
I agree.
He's got the tones right there.
Yeah.
Completely. I've been rewatching it I've rewatched the Succession Season 2 episode Turnhaven today.
I'm feeling bad.
Favorite episodes of television. And I've been reading a lot, but I think that I've been like catching up on a lot of TV. And one of the shows that I'm really enjoying right now is Killing It on Peacock.
Oh, yeah. The Craig Robinson show.
Oh.
It stars Craig Robinson, created by Luke Del Tredici and Dan Gore. And it is Craig Robinson is a like down on his luck dude who enters a boa constrictor catching contest in the Everglades. Now, because the setup here is that I'm sure we've all read these stories where like people who couldn't handle their snakes in the Everglade region, they would just like let them go into like mm-hmm. the swamps and shit. And now they're like a threat to the environment, and so they have to be caught. And so there's like this $20,000 contest for whoever catches the most snakes in the swamps. And of course, like that is the exact amount of money that Craig Robinson's character needs to get out of the jam he's in. And it's like, first of all, the cast is great. Craig Robinson as Craig. Craig Robinson has reached the Tony Danza,
mm-hmm.
all my characters are named my name level of like TV acting.
That's the Pizza Hut money.
Yeah. Claudio Doherty as Jillian, who I just
from Our Flag Means Death.
From Our Flag Means Death and from Love and from other things. She's just like fantastic.
She's
and so,
great.
Funny. Lily Sullivan from The Righteous Gemstones in season one of I Think You Should Leave. Tim Heidecker as Tom Cruise's character from Magnolia. Like, it's so the casting is really great. And first of all, I was not aware on Peacock that you could curse and shit. So there's like a lot. It's like mm-hmm. adult. But it also deals with like it's a show about people on the lowest rungs of the socioeconomic ladder who've like been left behind by capitalism mm-hmm. and who are just like trying to get by. And part of the journey of the show is, you know, along with all the snake catching and all of like hilarity and wild stuff that happens is like, they all kind of like bond together into this community as a way to get by. And it's just a really, really funny show. It's really fun. I'm enjoying it. It's not like anything else that's out there in the same way that Abbott and Our Flag Means Death feel really singular and unique. Killing It feels like that. Really fun Amazing. Show.
I love that that's what streaming has given us now, is you can go super niche like that and just produce like a short 10-episode series that's like for a very specific audience that discover and love it. And it can just exist and be awesome and not have to be 22 episodes and appeal to everybody all the time.
Yeah. And I really like that like these found family stories are becoming like such a trope now. And I think it's because like people our age grew up with like some of the ultimate found families, you know, like the X-Men and stuff like that. And it makes me really happy to see shows that are being made at a prestige TV level where that discovery of community for whatever reason, whether it's socioeconomic or sexuality or just living like on the outside of society, that's become such a core part of TV now. And that's definitely like one of my comfort tropes. So it's really nice to see.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy. I watch that movie all the time. Another ultimate found family movie.
That's a great one. I will go on Disney Plus and just watch scenes from Marvel movies way too much. Like even when I'm not sick, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
I really do that all the time. And it's sad. And I don't like to talk about it, but I do that constantly.
No, I do it, man.
No shame.
Captain America picking up Thor's hammer. That's like, once a week, probably.
Yeah.
One of the greatest scenes in the entire MCU is the before, as Ultron is like knitting his consciousness together, and they're all, and the rest of the Avengers are just like partying at Stark Tower. The hangout. I just love hangouts. Yeah. I love superheroes just like hanging out. And that is like so fun. That is such a fun scene. Everybody drinking like Thor's 1,000-year-old grog, seeing who could pick up Thor's hammer, roasting Rhodey for being like a Kmart superhero. Yeah. It's really fun. Like that stuff is so fun.
Yeah, that's the good stuff.
And I love Black Widow's response. Like, oh, that's not a question I need answered. It's like, oh yeah, that's perfect for her character. Yeah.
It's like, no thanks. I don't want to know.
Well, listen. Hopefully, this will be over soon, Rosie.
I believe in us.
You've been dealing with it since Thursday. I've been dealing it with since Saturday. Although, as I told my primary care doctor, because I'm lucky enough to have health insurance, and I think that's a thing that everybody in this country should just have.
Yes,
definitely.
There was like a 2 to 3, maybe 4 day period where it was like, oh man, my allergies are bad. So you know, like it's hard to know, but I'm gonna say Saturday, and so hopefully this is over soon. I know that there's probably some people yelling at their speakers right now, get that antiviral Paxlovid or whatever it's called. I tried, let me tell you folks, I tried. I was like, hey, what about that antiviral I've been hearing about? And they didn't want to give it to me because I guess my symptoms aren't bad enough, and I respect it. There's probably people who really really require it. They are giving that out for anybody in New York. I believe that's free. If you get that prescribed, you can get that for free. I guess they just have a lot of it over
there. That's amazing.
In New York City.
Nice.
But hopefully this will be over soon. And we'll be back with you by our next episode, fully whole and well, and certainly finished with our journey to full recovery. Up next, the outro of the show. It's a big thank you to Rosie Knight, Chris Lord, and Saul Rubin, our super producers, for joining us and helping us carry through the episode on X-ray vision as Rosie and I are dealing with reduced lung capacity. Rosie, what do you have to plug?
Well, depending on how I'm feeling this weekend, I may or may not be there. But do remember that there is an amazing Transformers Day event at Pulp Fiction in Long Beach, which is my local comic shop. It's going to be a ton of cool artists there. You can get some rad Transformers comics on sale. Even if I'm not there, I'll make sure some of my zines and stuff are there that you can pick up. And it will just be a really good time. I dream that I will be well, but it feels like I will never be well. So I'm not promising anything.
No, we're going to get there. We're going to do it.
We can do it.
Yeah, we can do it. Folks, don't forget to check out our videos on Uncultured YouTube channel in the show notes for the listener's guide to X-ray vision, where we provide more details about the stuff we talk about on each episode, including this one. Our next episode will be on May 27th, by which time we hope to be fully whole and well, and our bodies free of the novel coronavirus COVID-19. Don't forget, rate and review us with the 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. We want those 5 stars. We need them. We gotta have them. Our lives will not be complete unless you drop the 5-star ratings on the podcast platform of your choice. X-ray Vision is a Crooked Media production. The show is produced by Chris Lord and Saul Rubin. The show is executive produced by myself and Sandy Gerard. Our editing and sound design is by Vasilis Fotopoulos. Dellen Villanueva and Matt DeGroot provide video production support, and Alex Relaford handles social media. Thank you, Brian Vasquez, for our theme music. See you next time.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.